Well, tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to be talking about your psychic intuition. Nancy Dutertre back with us, and we'll get right into that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Nancy Dutertre, known as the Skeptical Psychic, is an attorney, trained in securities litigation and corporate law, became a psychic detective and spiritual medium. She now works with law enforcement and victims' families on missing persons, homicide cases as well. She's a medical intuitive, energy healer, paranormal investigator, teaches psychic development in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, lectures on the university level to students as well. She is a magnum cum laude graduate of Princeton University and honors published law review graduate of the Pace Law School as well. Nancy, what a bio. My gosh. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you.
And how is Nancy doing these days?
Nancy's doing all right. How is George doing?
George is doing great, too. I just came back from St. Louis. My granddaughter graduated from college, and
it was
really neat to see that happen. You know, we helped raise her as a little baby and saw her just growth and her development with a little few bumps in the road, but she picked herself up and kept going, and she's turned out to be just a great human being.
That's fantastic. I have a son who is about to graduate from high school. So we have like sort of the other end of the spectrum, big year.
Yep, and they'll get there. That's something else. Yeah. Well, that's good. Now, how did you get involved in this? As a background as an attorney and a securities litigation specialist, how did you get involved in the psychic and intuitive end?
I only got involved because I was trying to help a psychologist mentor and friend of mine, and he was going to be writing, you know, the great next book on intuitive gestalt psychotherapy, and that's something I trained in and I'm certified in. I did that for about 20 years. And he was supposed to write, you know, the book. And I had a couple of dreams about him, and I called him up and I said, you know, I had this dream that you were getting kind of moldy. He said, what do you mean moldy? I said, well, you know, that green stuff, like you're supposed to be doing something on your book and you're not. So I am offering, you know, any help I can give, copywriting, editing, bouncing ideas, whatever you need to write this book. And he said, yeah, yeah. And he didn't get around to it. So I ended up figuring, well, okay, if he's not going to write this book, I'm going to have to write it. Ultimate, and I thought it was going to be a book on the psychology of intuition, you know, because I wasn't into any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up discovering that the scientific world, the medical world, just weren't interested. So I went wandering off and spoke to anybody who could tell me anything about this. And that's how I got into it. I ended up training into it because I realized you have to experience it. You can't learn it. You have to feel it and know it.
And how did the missing persons tie-in happen for you?
Because by, you know, just sort of the luck of the draw, so to speak, my psychic teacher, I had seen her on TV, and I contacted the TV station. I said, can you put me in touch with her? They gave me her email, and I wrote to her, and I said, look, I would love to interview you for my book, and I'll fly anywhere in the country, you know, wherever you are, because I'd love to talk to you. She's a very powerful person, and she's an RN, and she's a no-nonsense kind of person. And she said, well, where do you live? And I said, well, nobody's ever heard of it. It's a little town in New Jersey. And I told her the name, and she said, okay, I'll meet you at the such-and-such cafe. Turns out we lived, you know, 5 minutes away from each other. So she is a well-known psychic detective. Her name is Nancy Rowland Weber. She's done a lot of TV work. She's very well-respected. And that was sort of, you know, I ended up being sort of apprenticed to her for about 10 years. So that's how I got into that. But it was sort of by accident. I mean, it turned out it was perfect for me because I'm really suited to it. A lot of psychics aren't because it's very you know, sort of spooky.
It is spooky. It sounds like it could be emotionally draining, too, especially when you have to deal with families and tell them, exactly how you feel and what you think's out there.
Yeah, the worst thing is that if you're a really careful person, the way I think that I am, I don't want to say anything wrong. And I certainly don't want to say, you know, if it's a, I get a lot of things, readings where I'm being asked to sort of determine things like, well, was it a suicide or a homicide? And you have to be really careful when you're telling people.
Oh, my gosh.
Like that.
Look, there was a psychic who is not alive anymore. No need to bring up who that person was. But that person would say on some national television shows, when asked about missing children in front of the parents, he's dead. And
I think I know exactly who you're talking about.
And then he was found as a grown young adult, very much alive. And, you know, it's heartbreaking for the parents to live through life that long thinking their child is dead. He was kidnapped. And then you find out that he's very much alive.
Well, and I also kind of learned another lesson along the way, which is I used to, because I thought I was doing a good thing, I would get calls from people who were they were friends of, or, you know, they wanted to help out in a particular case, and they'd say, well, can you help out and do readings on these usually missing persons that were probably homicide-type cases? And I would do that, and all of a sudden, you know, you'd hear from other people, other sources, the families were really upset. They didn't want it reopened. They didn't want, you know, some psychic involved in this thing. They didn't want to know about it. Or even worse, these people wouldn't have the resources to have an investigator to follow up on the information that you're giving. So the whole thing was pointless. So the only way that I work now is I'll either work directly with the families, or I'll work with law enforcement, but nobody else.
Some psychics who are new to the business and do this kind of work as well, in the beginning, they were looked at as the suspects, Nancy. Did that ever happen with you?
No, but I always worried about it.
Because... I mean, because you were outlining details that only the police would know. That's, you know, going to draw a red flag with these people.
Yeah, and that's what I tell, a lot of people get in touch with me and they want to get involved in this, if you want to call it a business, this profession. And that's the first thing I tell them, which is you have to be extremely careful. If you don't have some type of a reputation going in, then, you may become a target. And a lot of these cases, they do involve homicides and really crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
And dangerous people, and they may not be too happy about you being involved in it either.
And then they find out who you are. That's all you need.
Exactly. And I've been shuttled around by detectives and law enforcement to locations where the suspects live, or where they're, I can see them in plain sight, and they want to know, well, you know, what vibes are you getting now? You know, you've described the suspect pretty well, and now you see them in front of you, so what are your feelings? And usually my feelings are, get me the heck out of here. I don't want them looking at me. It's a little bit dicey sometimes, or you go to places that, you've sensed pretty strongly that a homicide was committed, and you're kind of standing there in the middle of that sensation, which is also kind of it's not a comfortable feeling. I mean, the reason why I would even do things like that is because ultimately I'm really hoping that whatever I'm saying is going to come up with some information that's going to help them solve the crime.
How much of what you do, Nancy, is remote viewing?
People, you know, I have a thing about that because I'm a trained remote viewer. I trained with Lynn Buchanan, and one of my mentors was Ingo Swann.
You had the best.
Yeah, I absolutely. I know that. And I belong to a lot of remote viewing groups. I'm also trained, well, that's control remote viewing. I'm also trained in associative remote viewing with Marty Rosenblatt. So, you know, I do a number of different methods. And when people talk about, they say, people get kind of casual these days. Oh, yeah, I was remote viewing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And for me, remote viewing is very specific. And the way that I define it, as I say, it's clairvoyance with protocols, which means if you're doing anything without those protocols, it's clairvoyance. You know, you may be looking to the future, you're looking into something that's at long distance, whatever it is, but you're not doing remote viewing because there's a very, very specific process to it, which is why it was set up that way originally, so that you could, it's set up that way so you don't think. That's number one, because thinking gets in, it interferes, and so you don't have emotions. Those all interfere with the process of sensing. And it's also set up so that it can be judged and compared in retrospect, so that you don't suddenly sound like you're retrofitting something. I say, oh, yeah, I saw that. I just didn't mention it. But, yeah, that was part of it. You can't do that. It's a very, very clean process. So people will say they're doing remote viewing, and they're not. When I'm doing a lot of the more psychic detective type work, I'm doing what other people might call remote viewing, but it's mm-hmm. not, because I'm sitting there getting impressions, and I may be writing them down, I may be drawing them or sketching or whatever, but it's not the process of, you know, starting out with what they call an ideogram, and then breaking it down into segments, and then sketching out each portion, and then putting descriptor words and separating out certain feelings that you have about it. None of that.
How do you train other people to enhance their psychic and intuitive skills?
I absolutely believe, because I'm only a trained person, I'm not a natural, I'm just trained. So, and I know that it can be done. And I also know that the more you do it, the better you get. And to a point where it just keeps happening, and you have to sometimes sort of stop it. The way to train people is to free up their minds. You know, I'm working on a whole new project right now. I'm working on a book on politics and government. And I went to go hear a guy speak who is an expert in gerrymandering. And he's a brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. He's a Princeton professor. He heads up a neuroscience department. He's a molecular biologist. And at the end, I went up to him and I asked him a couple of things. And I said, oh, and by the way, I decided to take a little risk. And I said, you know, I've been trying to get the people over at Princeton, especially in the neuroscience and psychology departments, to take a look at studying intuition, and particularly psychic intuition. Do you know anybody there who might be interested in that kind of thing? And he flat out said no, and virtually, almost, I mean, he was very polite, but mentally he walked away. Because people who are that intelligent and that bright are focused into their brains to such a degree that they haven't figured out that there is a completely different way to perceive life and information that's perfectly good information, but they don't see it, doesn't exist, and therefore it won't be studied. And it makes me crazy. And in fact, I have this little quote that I love. It's Einstein once said, it was during a lecture I think he did in 1926, he said, whether you can observe a thing or not depends on the theory which you use. It is the theory which decides what can be observed. And the problem is that really intelligent people in our world are so busy on a particular train of thought and a theory, they can't see this stuff. So you have to train people not to think the way they normally think. They've got to go out on a limb. They have to be willing to be wrong. And I have to tell you, I hate being wrong. That's why it took me a long time to do this. I felt like a fool. I felt like I was going to be lumped in with a group of people who were sloppy thinkers, and I didn't want to be. So you have to create a space for people that's really careful, really comfortable, and you allow them to make what they think are going to be huge mistakes. And once they can do that, that's when it starts to kick in.
Are people afraid to use their intuition?
Are you?
No, I'm not.
That's a good thing.
I use it as much as I can, now that I realize what it is. I mean, years ago, I didn't know what it was, and I didn't act on it.
Yeah.
You know, it saved my life several years ago, telling me not to go through an intersection when I had the green light. I stopped, and when I stopped, moments later, somebody came right through their red light. They would have broadsided me, Nancy.
I can't tell you. I mean, I've heard so many stories like that. I mean, Ingo had several stories like that. He nearly got killed walking off a curb, and he stopped. He heard a voice in his head that don't do it.
Don't do it.
He would have been killed. Yeah. My husband had an almost identical thing with you. He'd had a dream the night before at that intersection, decided, there's a green light. I'm not going to do it. Sure enough, car went down the highway running a red light. It saves people all the time. It's because all of us have an innate ability to access events in what we call the future. You know, we tend to live on this really linear time frame, and we think linearly, so we don't trust anything that doesn't work on that. But it does all the time. I find that, and I don't know if you get this, but I call, you know, whenever I make phone calls to people, and usually people, if I haven't spoken to them for a long time or whatever, almost every day, almost all the time, people say, I literally was about to pick up the phone, or I was just thinking about you, whatever. There's, if you forget all the rules of timing, and you just go with the flow, go with your intuition, you begin to discover there's a lot of value to it for many different reasons.
Yet we all have these abilities, don't we? I mean, they're built into us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a matter of figuring out how to access them. That's
right.
What I had to do. And by the way, some of my best intuitions these days come when I'm asleep.
Because that's a very powerful way to get information in your sleep state.
Right, because I'm a lucid dreamer. I remember all my dreams, or most of them, and I think I'm out of my brain enough that I can allow this flow of information, which we all have an ability to access, and that's what I've been trying to teach people. But it's, you have to untrain them from a lifetime of thought patterns.
The name of the book that we're talking with Nancy Dutartre is Psychic Intuition, Everything You Ever Wanted to Ask About But Were Afraid to Ask and Afraid to Know. And when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be asking her about How to Talk to an Alien, another one of her works you wrote a few years ago. We'll take your phone calls next hour with Nancy Dutartre as we talk about psychic intuition. We'll also talk about her work that she did a few years ago called How to Talk to an Alien. That's right, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Nancy Dutartre with us as we talk now about her work, How to Talk to an Alien. Boy, the title alone makes me want to ask you, what does this mean?
What does it mean? Well, you got interested in UFOs as a teenager, right?
That's right. Yep. Thanks to Mom. Brought me home books, and then all of a sudden the interrupted journey with Barney and Betty Hill, that got going, and I was obsessed after that.
So maybe you've had a few conversations yourself.
I might have. I'm not sure.
I think it's really hard to tell because not all conversations with, I mean, I call them aliens. I know people refer to them as visitors or star people or extraterrestrials, whatever, ETs. I just call them aliens because it's easier. My husband is an alien. He's French. But they communicate in a whole variety of different ways, which don't necessarily look like our human conversations. So sometimes it's harder to tell if you are being communicated with. You know, I think that's part of the problem with the whole thing. But, I mean, they communicate, obviously, the most common way you always hear about is telepathically.
Right.
People get downloads. I never quite understood what a download was until many of my friends get them and they talk about them. And I sort of realized, oh, okay, I get that, you know, from time to time. Sure, I think I probably get what you would call a download. Probably a lot of people do. I think in some cases it's more intense than others, but it's a sudden, almost like a dumping of information that you're not quite sure how you got to those conclusions or information or whatever. You just suddenly have it. The whole business with implants, as you know, that's another way that if you might have been abducted, not know it, and you've ended up with some kind of an implant, in which case, I know that there's some contactees who say that after they get these implants, they get almost like holographic imagery that's presented to them via these implants, or they hear certain voices because of them. So that's a different way. But I mean, they communicate through symbols, crop circles, dreams, channeling, certain types of remote viewing. You can contact them that way, or they can contact you, I suppose. The crafts themselves flash lights, and that can be like almost like a binary type of discussion. Body language, just like us. Or different types of languages, speeches, sounds, anything. Some of them chirp like birds. Some bark like dogs. Some buzz.
Where are they from, Nancy?
I don't know. I think they're from all over the place, and I tend to get overwhelmed by the implications of where they can come from. I think they're coming from... you know, inside the earth, under the sea, interdimensionally, they're time space, as well as, you know, what we always think of as, you know, from other planets or galaxies. But somebody suggested to me, because I was explaining that I had seen this, and I think I told you about this a long time ago. I had seen a mothership, basically. It was the size of a football field with my daughter. And it appeared, and we were out standing outside of a movie theater. And it was a whole big, I mean, it was covered with orange lights. It was huge, massive, sitting there. A giant orb came out of it, this white luminescent thing about 20 feet in diameter, moved all the way around. And then this entire craft either shielded or dematerialized. And where this location was right on a highway at a movie theater location in a mall. Now, you would have thought, even though it was nighttime, somebody had to have seen this. And I said to my friend, why do you think that is? Nobody else saw that. And why is it that that happens? And he said that he believes what they're doing is momentarily shifting our actual time frame, so that in that moment they're there in that space.
Well, in this communication, what do you think they want?
I think there are a whole bunch of different concerns. Some of them want to help us, educate us, and I mean, there are all kinds of messages all over the place, you know, to get us to evolve. And by the way, I think that relates to getting us to evolve as our psychic and intuitive sensibilities. So it's all connected. you know, this really interesting work that's come out by Linda Moulton Howe with the CJ.
Yes.
And the whole binary codes that have come out, and those messages are kind of, well, it's interesting. First of all, it's a, I guess it's a triple layered binary code. It's not just, you know, simple binary code the way we look at it, but it's through colors and shadings. So it's dimensional, which is what I've always believed about alien written languages.
Well, this the communication, Nancy, from them,
yeah.
Does it come in the form of telepathy? I mean, how does it come?
I think with some of them, it's telepathic. Some of them, they do both. They do, during encounters, they try a little, you know, audible speech. They try some telepathy. They try some, depending, some of them will try some alien language. And if that doesn't work, they revert back to whatever the, you know, our native language is. So they're using all different methods. Some of them are using technology, and some of them aren't. Some of them just have massive IQs, apparently.
Do they try to trick us at all with whatever they're trying to convey? Or are they pretty straightforward?
Well, what was interesting was in that binary code message that was decoded, it apparently is coming from a group of, I guess they're called Immerthers, Greys, good guys, or at least claiming to be good guys.
We think they're good guys, yeah.
Warning us about the bad guy Greys.
How do you know the difference?
Well, yeah, that's my issue, exactly. And you have the same issue in the paranormal world.
Sure.
You're dealing with ghosts and spirits. I have a little motto on my website, which I basically ripped off from the Department of Defense or from the Reagan era, which is trust and verify.
Well, that's a good motto.
It's a great motto. So you have to trust. That's the intuitive part where you have to stay open to a new concept, but then don't get fooled by it. Don't get pulled into whatever it is until you've been able to verify it. Don't get pulled into your own personal deceptions on things. So that's great to get those messages, and it's really interesting that they're matching up with a lot of the crop circle messages and some of the other contactee stories that have come back. So once they start to kind of match and hook up together, they become a little bit more trustworthy in my view. But I don't trust anybody. I trust myself.
Have you always been that way?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Because you're always working with everybody's agendas. And some people are a little bit, not just people, but entities, a little bit more devious about it than others. But you can, if you really get tuned into your own intuitive sensibilities, you learn that you can feel, not just think, but you can feel a trust in somebody and in what they say. You could feel whether or not it's true.
Well, I was going to say, how do you really distinguish whether they're trying to set you up with some kind of fabricated story?
What I do is I test it.
They want to cook us and eat us or something.
Yes, I've heard that one too. Although I've heard that's a slightly different group. And they may equally be out there and doing that. And then you got to ask yourself, well, you know, if the good guys really want to help us and save us, well, yeah, and they're saying they're not allowed to intervene in our evolution or whatever. They just want to encourage it. Well, how helpful is that really? You know, and what's that about? So I think we as a human species, we've got to develop ourselves, our own intuitive sensibilities to figure out what's right, what's wrong. So we're not trying to judge on what we think, which usually messes us up. And we have to strengthen ourselves as a species. And ultimately, that may be what helps us, saves us, or whatever, and allows us to discern who has got a good motivation and who doesn't.
Are you convinced that they are physical as opposed to dimensional creatures?
That's a really hard question. And the reason why it's a hard question...
You're on the fence on that one, aren't you?
A little bit. A little bit. I mean, I've heard people say that about the spacecraft also, that, you know, maybe it's more of a mind thing.
Mm-hmm. Like a blob or something.
Yeah. But I can tell you, having seen what I've seen and being able to match it up with my daughter, and we both drew drawings before, you know, comparing any of our observations, they were identical. When you see something that's as real as, you know, the table next to you, you say, well, that's real. That has to be real. But what I've learned about what we call reality is it's so delicate, and it's made up of, I go back to that little quote of Einstein, depends on your theory. It is the way that you choose to connect the dots that are out there. And they're all out there.
Have you?
Which means every reality overlaps.
Have you been abducted at all, in your opinion?
Well, I had an experience 8 months ago where I had been sort of knocked out with pneumonia for a while. I went out to dinner, came home, fell asleep early, around 9:30 or so, and was sleeping. I slept for 30 hours, which I've never done before.
30 hours a day in a few hours?
Wow. Yeah, it was very, very odd. And I remember the dreams that I was having during those 30 hours.
Did people think that you had passed on or something?
No.
Jeez. 30
no.
hours.
No, but I was, I've never done that in my life. Anyway, so my dear friend on the West Coast had called me on, you know, the third day or whatever. She said, oh, you know, what's new? Have you had any contact recently? And I said, no, I don't think so. And she said, oh, okay, well, what's up? And I said, well, I just slept for 30 hours. And she started laughing hysterically. Very long story short, she was abducted. She was taken up to a craft. She vaguely, you know, of course, I was asking her all the details of it. I said, you know, did you see the entities? Yes. Do you remember what they look like? Yeah, kind of. Were there any other humans up there with you? Did they take a whole group? Yes. Did you recognize anybody? Just one. Who? You. So she said I was up there. She came back with an implant. I've never had an implant in my life. I have no recollection of ever having been abducted.
And was this the real you or a doppelganger?
Well, okay, and then you get into a whole other set of theories about how many doppelgangers we have, and I've heard a bunch of theories. I can tell you a strange thing about me in general, just as an overall characteristic of me in my life. I am mostly invisible to people. People, my family members, people, my best friends, can almost walk, and they do actually, walk right past me in a hallway or a place where they're looking for me and they don't see me. That's number one. Number two, people who are complete strangers regularly tell me that I look very familiar to them. They tell me this all the time. And my answer is, okay, well, I have this very generic looking face. But it makes you wonder someplace, maybe there's a bunch of all of us, you know, wandering around either in this dimensional plane or in several parallel planes. I don't know.
Could be. Could be. And how many different languages do they try to speak to you in?
Me personally, my daughter and I started to get phone calls from what I believe were, they had to have been aliens, and it was after we had seen this mothership, and that went on for a while. I couldn't understand what they were saying. I did hear them say my daughter's name once, but I couldn't decipher it. It was the weirdest electronic-sounding male voice coming through very, very distorted sound waves, as well as almost musical sounding sounds. I've heard tape recordings from other people, and they are speaking a very, very simple English, like only like almost like pidgin English, and they've got a very, very strong accent, very difficult to understand. But they speak in, I mean, a lot of them are capable, they're polyglots, they can speak hundreds of languages, as well as their own.
Interesting take. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, Nancy. We're going to come back and take phone calls as we talk about psychic intuition. If you want to share one of your psychic stories with us, go ahead. And then her latest book from a year and a half ago, How to Talk to an Alien. And why is that so important? More to come on Coast to Coast AM.